Hello and welcome to Michael's Record Collection episode number 12. I'm Michael Citro and in this episode talking to Ray Shulman from Gentle Giant. Gentle Giant, obviously well known in progressive rock circles, and it was interesting to speak with Ray about Freehand, their album that they put out many years ago, but is getting a new treatment from Steven Wilson. He's doing a 5.1 surround mix as well as a Dolby Atmos mix. So this new reissue has new ways to listen to Gentle Giant's Freehand. Ray was a great interview. I really enjoyed talking to him. He's very insightful. Told me a little bit about the making of the album, a little bit about working on the reissue and the process that they have with Steven Wilson. Also told me a lot about, you know, just Gentle Giant in general back in the day. So it was a lot of good information. I hope you enjoy it. And also I want to invite you, if you do like this episode and other episodes, to go ahead and support us over at patreon.com/Michael's Record Collection. No hard sell here, but you know, for just a couple of bucks a month, you can support the show and you can get extra benefits from your support. And of course, the more you support the show, the more benefits you get, exclusive items, that kind of thing. So if you're into that, it's there for you. But again, no pressure. So here you go. Let's get to that interview with Ray Shulman. Enjoy. Welcome to Michael's Record Collection. I'm very excited today, being joined today by Ray Shulman of Gentle Giant. Thank you for your time, Ray.
You're welcome. Okay, good to be here.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Freehand. It's getting a new treatment from Steven Wilson, new mix. Yep. That release will come out in June 25th. And it's the original album came out almost 46 years ago now.
It can be.
How did you all, this is, I think, the fourth maybe release that you guys did that Steven Wilson is mixing. Is that right?
Yeah, probably is. Yeah, I forget now. He's done so many.
How did you guys originally get involved with Steven?
Well, I mean, Steven's always been a fan anyway. And as my kind of daytime job I've been doing for a few years now, I put together kind of Blu-rays and DVDs for kind of music acts. It's basically, they throw me a load of video and audio and I kind of combine it all together with some graphics and all that. Mm-hmm. I think Steven, first of all, got in touch for me to do his, you know, one of his releases. And he just, you know, he just mentioned, look, you know, I'm a big fan of the band. In fact, the first one he wanted to do, he said, is there any chance you have the In the Glasshouse, you know, multi-tracks? And we said, no, I'm afraid they're a lot easier. Because that's the one he feels could really benefit from, you know, a kind of makeover. But that wasn't, you know, that's, they've gone forever. So, but then he said, I'd love to get involved and remix you, particularly in 5.1, to do the surround mixes of your stuff. And you know, I think it would really, you know, the kind of arrangements would really, you know, really suit being treated that way, the separation that exists and everything. And so that's, it was like, you know, just that really. He was a fan, he got in touch. And we were looking to, in fact, we had a few conversations before, myself and Kerry, to maybe do it ourselves. But, you know, when Steven, you know, got in touch, and he's an experienced, you know, 5.1 mixer and like with a really good ear and very kind of not exactly slavish to the original, but, you know, he's not reverent, but like, you know, he treats them with respect and doesn't try to modernize them. He just like tries to bring something fresh, you know, and everything else. So anyway. Long, bit convoluted, but yeah, it was just that he was basically a fan who, you know, wanted to do it.
How many of your albums do you not have the multi-tracks of?
We had bits and pieces. I think we had, there's some were incomplete. When we looked for the first album was incomplete. Oh no, we eventually got that complete. We thought they were lost because another fan of the band in Sweden, this guy called Dan Bornemark, this was probably over 20 years ago. Did some research and he transferred a lot to ADAT at the time. Luckily, actually, because after that, even more went missing because a lot of them were in the Universal or Polygram vault. And it's like kind of so chaotic that, you know, I'm sure they don't know what they have. And some boxes weren't probably labeled exactly right and all that kind of thing. So I mean, unless you go down there and dig through like a billion tapes, like you'd just never find. But I think we have most of the later ones are complete. I'm just trying to think what we don't have. Don't have the last one. Don't have civilian multi-tracks. But we did have, because it'll be upcoming, we did have Interview, all the multi-tracks, and The Missing Piece. After that, I'm not sure. In fact, I think Gary originally kept them in his house. And then when he moved to the States many years ago, he put them with Kerry. So Kerry's been the keeper of all the tapes up until now.
Gotcha. Do you listen to music in 5.1 and Dolby Atmos and the things that Steven's doing now?
Well, I do listen as part of my kind of gig. I have to listen in 5.1 just to check things out. So I actually haven't done Dolby Atmos yet, even though he's mixed it in Dolby Atmos. When he was mixing, he said, "Why don't you come over and listen at his studio?" And of course, it was full on lockdown then. So I said, "I don't think I'd better." I wasn't going out in public, so I haven't heard it in Atmos yet. But you know, I'm dying to. So that'd be really quite fascinating to see if he managed to get any kind of lateral movement and all that kind of stuff that Atmos could bring. So.
I was going to ask you that when Steven works on these, how hands-on are you guys? Do you just let him do his thing and then you hear it when he's done, or are you involved in the process at all?
No, very much leave him to it. He'll send reference mixes. And the first thing I do is I send them to Kerry. Say, you listen to this. Actually, I guess some of his clients, I guess they kind of ask for a revision and they write, you know, copious notes about every little thing. And unless it's something way off, I think really he's only ever done like about two revisions on some of the mixes for us, because we love what he brings to it and it's fresh ears. And you know, if we wanted it the way we wanted it, we just keep the original. So it's like, you know, there's no point trying to. There's a couple of times when maybe two parts have to be in balance because they complement each other. He kind of missed a little bit. That'd be the only kind of thing we'd bring up as a, but apart from that, I think we leave him to it and let his ears do the judgment.
That seems a smart move based on what he's accomplished in his career as a producer and remixer.
That's right.
This was your seventh studio album, the first with Chrysalis Records. It's widely considered your most commercial release and most accessible release, but this is Gentle Giant, so that's not to say that it's really commercial or really accessible.
That's right.
Can you just go back a little bit and talk about what that process was like for Gentle Giant in beginning to work on this album? Just give me a little bit about your process of how you approached creating this record.
This one, well, I think this one was actually probably one of the last ones where we were all living in the same town in Portsmouth in the south of England, you know. And we'd just been through, I mean, the reason it's called Freehand is we'd just been through some pretty kind of mean, you know, lawyerly things with our ex-manager and all that kind of stuff. So it was like the Freehand was like almost like freedom to do what we wanted to do. And actually the atmosphere was really good, very positive. Our tours were going well. And the other thing, we kind of assembled in Portsmouth to write it. I think we wrote it very quickly over just a few, not very many weeks. My process, I mean, I don't know if you want to, you know, specifically, I think Kerry's was quite similar too. Basically lots of improvising down to the old Revox two-track tape. That was our means at the time. Just basically improvising, doodling along, listen back. If something catches your ear, maybe just a little phrase or anything, then take that little chunk and just develop it into, you know, some kind of arrangement, and then a bit more development into a piece of music. I think Kerry was very much the same way. He'd do it on the piano. I did it very much on like a DI guitar. And the way we kind of developed the arrangements was they used to have this facility on the Revox where you could bounce one track to another, sound on sound basically, and build up the generations of sound. So that's what I kind of do just with the guitar and bass. And then, sorry.
I was just going to say, so it's more that you each brought individual thoughts into the sessions rather than you got in a room and jammed and saw what came of it?
Oh, no, we never did that. No, we never jammed as a band. It was always, like, you know, individually, we'd work out. In fact, by that time, some of the earlier albums, some of the songs actually combinations of myself and Kerry's sections, particularly on the first two, where, you know, you can identify, I wrote that bit, he wrote that bit, you know, and did all that. This was more like, we'd kind of come in almost like a complete arrangement each. I would then probably hand over my kind of backing, what you'd almost like a backing track, only in demo form, to maybe Derek and Kerry to add some more kind of maybe top line things and structure in the way he's going to write the lyrics. And Kerry was probably a bit more complete than myself, you know, where he delivered the complete thing to Derek to then get a theme together and, like, you know, something to spark his imagination on it and write about it.
So you guys have been producing your own records for a while at this point. Was this a decision because you thought that other producers might not get your music, or just an effort to really capture what you guys wanted to get down and not have that outside influence?
I'm not sure it was even conscious by then. I think, I mean, we had a great time with the first two records with Tony Visconti. It was fantastic. Really very good at being enthusiastic and kind of cajoling us and, you know, encouraging us to do our thing. But I think he was unavailable for Three Friends. And so that's basically, we did it out of, you know, well, we'll try it ourselves. We had a couple of disasters early on in the process where one studio didn't work out and all that kind of stuff. And then we went back to the studio we knew before, and we knew the engineers. And even actually the engineers at that time were very kind of creative anyway. So it just a natural process where we went into it anyway. We knew the kind of, we learned a lot just making those first two records about the kind of process and recording in an acoustic environment and all that kind of stuff. Very different to how it is nowadays, but, you know.
Your music was so different. Did you guys consider yourselves a rock band or just consider yourselves musicians?
It's hard to know. I mean, we wanted to be a famous rock band. You know, that was always the ambition. But our kind of, we always had something, there'd be always something dragging us back from complete commerciality or complete, there'll be, even on the later ones, which we're trying to go towards a more kind of accessible music, there'd always be something we'd throw in just to ruin it.
To ruin it, I love it.
Yeah. It's like I think that was something built into us that we couldn't commit totally to doing a commercial record, but we toyed with it a little bit. Sorry. Yeah, plus our musical tastes were very broad.
Yeah, vocally it's a very impressive album. Songs like Just the Same and Freehand, showing off Derek's voice, and On Reflection, showing your ability to be complex and use counterpoint. It's interesting that you say you all kind of worked on your own and brought your ideas in. Would you, for example, or Kerry or Derek, would you sit and do all the parts yourself and record those and bring those in, or did you work on those more later?
Well, we always left room. I mean, yeah, the basic sketch was down as a fixed arrangement, more or less. I mean, as I say, because I did it all with DI guitar. Obviously, when you transpose that to keyboards and everything, it changes quite a bit anyway, just the nature of the sound, and you have to adapt certain bits of the arrangement. But in the studio, we always left, you know, these are the fixed parts, that's the melody, but then we'd always leave room for lots of experimentation and then grab whatever other instruments were around. Another thing about using AddVision as a studio, there's always be something lying around, like a real harpsichord. And then there was this one, there used to be this old keyboard place, keyboard hire place in the church. And we used to get, you know, they had amazing stuff in there, like little pipe organs, like the Regal and all that kind of stuff. And we'd all just bring those in, just say, well, let's try some overdubs. and different things like that. So we and percussion ideas as well. So we'd leave those. That would be a studio embellishment.
Got it. Was it a little different for you? This wasn't the first album, I don't think, but you know, after Phil had left the band, were things just a little bit different for you and Derek?
Oh yeah, very much. Well, I mean, you know, yeah, we were past that by then. I mean, you know, like, no, it was pretty traumatic when he left in the first instance. By that time, we weren't sure whether we'd carry on or we should carry on or could carry on. But then we did, and we obviously did Glasshouse, etc., and then Power of the Glory and that. So by the time of Freehand, you know, that was absolutely, this was the band. And we were kind of very, very happy with the lineup then. Mm-hmm.
Just the Same kicks off this album. It seems to represent the idea that, you know, just because you're a musician or you're maybe somehow different than other people, was that sort of artificiality the sort of the driving force behind the lyrics and behind that song?
I'd be talking for Derek, but that's definitely the idea behind it. You know, Derek is the lyricist by then. Mm-hmm. And there again, also the difference between, obviously when Phil was in the band, Phil, because he was such a literary nut, you know, he loved reading, loved books, he loved the influence of books. And so he'd bring that more to it and Derek would be much more kind of abstract ideas or what the mood, the actual song would, you know, evoke. And he'd write that. But yeah, Just the Same was that. It's funny because somebody else said how reticent we were in kind of interviews at the time. And I tried to think of the reason, but actually when we got interviewed on the road during the tour, some of the interviews could be almost, not exactly hostile, but almost like, we used to like what you do, but we're not sure now, kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know. There was always that kind of feeling towards, well, you know, we're just doing what we want to do, basically. That's what Just the Same.
Put you on your back foot a little bit right off the bat.
It really is, yeah.
So you played bass, electric violin, violin, and viola on Freehand. Carrie played something like 17 instruments.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys just get bored with one sound and you just had to explore other things? I mean, you know.
I think, no, that was the whole idea. It was like, you know, the basic was the group thing, but then we loved other textures to bring in. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, if something was lying around, we'd try it, you know, or just hire stuff in and see if it worked on that particular song. So we'd have a go.
It was I think to me, it's a very Baroque sounding album with the instrumentation used, but also there's folk, there's Celtic, there's a lot of those influences. Was there a conscious effort to give this album a particularly Baroque feel, or was it something you were just into at the time, or did it just work out that way?
Yeah, I think it just worked out that way. I think Kerry's natural. That's the kind of music he loved anyway. He understood that kind of. That's his thing, really. So you know.
Do you have a favorite track on the album?
Well, probably, but it's actually, well, I like His Last Voyage.
Searching in the old.
just I just like the whole arrangement of Esther Carey's song, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, at least I get to start it with the bass. So, you know, thank you, Carey, making me feel good, making me look good.
Yeah, that's it starts off kind of as a almost like a traditional folk ballad. This real haunting vocal almost has the feel of a song you would hear in an old church to start
yeah,
out with.
And then it goes, and then as it progresses, it gets a little bit jazzier, you know, and even the kind of funky section. The jazz tinge to it too, so I like it.
Tell me about your studio setup. Were you just all in the same room doing it together, or, you know, did you do one thing at a time and just add things on?
On the actual studio, mm-hmm. when we recorded it for real, yeah. Well, the basic track was it really was just drums and bass, and Kerry and Gary would just play along, but they'd be scratch tracks, knowing they'd be replaced later. So I had to get it right every time, which is actually fine with John, but actually I won't badmouth anybody, but yeah.
The opening track, just the same, starts out with just finger snaps, yeah. And you play with the balance a little bit. Whose idea was that?
That's my track, so that's I kind of wrote it that way. I think maybe this finger snap thing was a studio idea, because they weren't part of the original arrangement. The guitar and the piano playing off against each other and the time thing was that's how it was written. That's how I wrote it, and added the kind of whole bass line thing in. But I think the finger pop thing was a. In fact, we may have actually added those in and then said this is great. Let's start off with that. So that was just like, you know, that would have been a studio thing.
And then, you know, the decision to flip it left and right like that, that was also an interesting choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's stereo.
But you made some interesting choices at the beginning of these songs. There was Time to Kill starts off with, like, I believe the Pong video game sound.
That's correct. Recorded round the corner from the studio, just with a little. I think Gary had a little cassette recorder, and just like, you know, I think it's probably one of the first ever recorded video games.
I was going to ask you that. Is that the first known video game reference in a rock song?
I think so. Unless someone tells me different, I think we're pretty good, pretty hot on that.
and that idea came from where? Where was that, Carrie's idea?
No, it wasn't Carrie. I don't know who's that actually idea. No, I think because I don't know why. It might have even occurred when we were in the pub playing Pong. You know, and knowing that the actual track started with a hard bam, you know, like a hard hit to start it, interrupting something was always going to be the idea. So, you know, that came as a bit of a shock. So, but the Pong thing worked out great.
It sounded like it was being played by someone who wasn't very good at Pong.
probably right.
For some of those negative sounds of it, you know, like. Right. To me, the most rocking sound or most rocking song on the album is Freehand, and that is really driven by your bass. Was that one of your thoughts that coming in? That was that your song coming in that everybody kind of contributed to, or did that come from somewhere else?
That's actually a Kerry song. And actually, I mean, actually, Kerry mentioned it on another interview that he preferred, because we did a whole like a live version, which is a little bit different. The whole middle section is quite different. It doesn't go into the kind of waltz time or anything like that. So, and it's a lot more rocky. And he said he wishes that was the version on, you know, on the album, because it was even more rockier than the one we did.
How does Gentle Giant choose a single off an album?
Well, we rarely had to, in fairness.
Did we
have any off this one? I'm not sure.
I don't recall off the top of my head, but I mean, it was, for me, Freehand probably would have been the one, or just the same, but Freehand was the, like I said, it was a more rocky track. I thought maybe that was one, but you know, just knowing what you guys produce, I can't imagine being a record label and saying, you know, we need a single off this album.
No. In fairness, like we were pretty lucky with, you know, the record company. I think by the time we got to Freehand, all the record companies, even Chrysalis, they knew that whatever record we put out, it's going to pay its own way. It's not going to be, you know, we're not going to be in debt to the record company. I mean, for them, I guess, when they're a big actor, they would have paid the second strings or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But so we weren't under any, you know, they didn't put us any under pressure to maybe get a single. I think, you know, maybe earlier on there was a couple of times we tried unsuccessfully to try and make a single, but you know, there, but I think by then we were kind of saying, yeah, we can't make a single.
What was the year to year like for the band at that time? Like how long would you spend in the studio, and then how long would you spend on tour?
We were pretty quick. I mean, albums, I'd say, usually writing period was around 6-7 weeks, recording period around 4 weeks, very, you know, quite a short time, and planning to go immediately on tour. And we were just really, I mean, at that particular time, at that period, we were very active, you know, doing, you know, US tour, then the European tour. So yeah, I mean, I'd have to look through what we did, but you know, I think we were pretty busy.
What challenges did you guys have recreating these songs live?
We'd always treat them as something different. We never tried to replicate the what was on record, because we couldn't, basically, because, like, you know, the amount of overdubs and the amount of, you know, we'd need about 20 people on the stage.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's what I'm asking is, like, how did you adapt to the live environment?
Yeah, I mean, we did quite a bit of a kind of instrument swapping and different sections. I think the ones we always did live. Oh, we, in fact, we did quite a few. I'm just thinking of the songs that lasted throughout, you know, most of our career. We did just the same. Always did Freehand and On Reflection.
In my way that I use you, do you think I really abused you? On reflection now, it doesn't matter. How can you say I need you? Give me more than anyone else you more. Can't say it now, can't say it now, it's over.
It's my act as my calling, right and exactly the falling. In ways of falling, from where I will be, even be the same way. It's always open the same way as I came and went. I tried to be with you, remember you. Still you stay, tied in your way. Changing times, watching the signs.
I think they're the three that stayed in the kind of, you know, our kind of repertoire. Mm-hmm. I can't think of any others off that album that did.
On Reflection sounds like it was Like, I know Neil Morse is a big fan of your band. I'm not sure how familiar you are with Neil and his music, but it's clearly there are Gentle Giant influences in songs like Thoughts and some of the other Spock's Beard and Neil Morse solo albums.
Right.
Are you aware of those? And if you are, you know, do you find that flattering or do you find that to be kind of, why are you copying us kind of thing?
No, in fairness, I didn't, even at the time, I didn't listen to our contemporaries by the time the band had finished, I never reflected back on what was going on at the same time, my musical taste had changed. I was listening to different things by then. So sorry to say, but I don't know why.
Speaking of that, what do you remember what music you were listening to around this time with the creation of this album?
Yeah, I don't know. It wouldn't have been it wouldn't have been any of our contemporaries. But you know, who knows? It could have been James Brown for all I know. You know, it could have been anything. I don't think it was anything particular. Always loved jazz. Always listened to a lot of jazz. But in terms of the current music that was going around, who knows? It might even be an ABBA by then. Who knows? Too maybe a year later.
Do you have some favorite albums that you still go back to that you listen to and you still enjoy from way back at the beginning of your career?
You mean our albums?
No, other albums, like other artists.
Oh, other artists. Oh, probably only jazz albums. You know, Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing from that era that I'd probably listen to more than, I don't think I'd listen to any kind of, I like a lot of the albums then, you know. In fact, part of my work is like a, you know, because I do work on other kind of people's stuff nowadays. And so I have to listen to it. I'm forced to. I can't just look at waveforms. But in fact, it's like what I was doing for like the band, you know, the record Cahoots. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah, but it's a great album. I mean, I only realize now, but I just kind of, you know, thought that's a great album. It sounds really good and the playing's, you know, really lovely, loose and everything. But there's not a lot of like kind of, you know, that period of stuff that I can really say I listen to nowadays.
Mm-hmm. It's, I guess that's an advantage of not having heard it. Now, when you have to work on stuff like that, you're hearing it fresh. You're not hearing it with the baggage of, you know, 40 years of time.
Yeah. And probably way back then, if we were considered their competitors, we wouldn't have liked it anyway.
So how would a company put together a Gentle Giant tour? Who, what band do you pair with a Gentle Giant?
Well, we had some very odd matching, you know, until we could actually headline and tour ourselves, it was very difficult. And we had some very odd ones. Our first tour of the US with Black Sabbath, which taught us a lot about kind of the stagecraft needed to sell this stuff to American audiences. You know, yeah. We weren't going to just stand there po-faced and play complicated music. It was like, you know, get out there, act like a rock star, act like a rock musician and, you know, make a fool of yourself to just entertain at least.
Yeah. So yeah. Was it difficult to win over some of those early audiences?
Sure, yeah, it was. And then just thinking, as part of that first tour, we just finished with Black Sabbath, ready to go home, and then we were off at the Jethro Tull tour. And that was fantastic because his audience was so receptive and Ian was, you know, he was a fan and, you know, he liked it. He gave us lots of leeway in terms of sound check and all that kind of stuff. And all that kind of stuff. And he enjoyed the fact we went, you know, his audience really appreciated it because warming up for them, they had a great night. He was never kind of, he was very confident in their, you know, he didn't see it as a threat in any way. So he just loved it that both bands would go down really well.
Gentle Giant called it a day in 1980. And here you are, you know, 41 years later, and you're sort of giving a listen to some of these albums. You probably haven't heard some of these albums in years in a whole new way. What prompted the move to remix them? And was it just a matter of getting them into a new format or were the updates something that you guys wanted because the technology at the time wasn't such a, you know, as it is now.
I think that's pretty much the case. I think Jesse, you know, and in fact, just and what Stephen brings to it, as I say, he's like, it's like a, some fresh ears rather than us doing it again and trying to replicate what we did with maybe more modern equipment. That wouldn't have worked for us anyway. We weren't kind of interested. Mm-hmm. We'd done our thing. We'd done it at the time. And so passing kind of, you know, passing it on and let someone take another look at it. And the fact that he can mix it in 5.1 in surround, which opens up a whole new thing. So, yeah.
I think I read in an interview, and this, like most people, this kind of changes sometimes, but I think I read that you had said your favorite Gentle Giant album was Acquiring the Taste. Is that the case?
That's probably true, yeah. Yeah, that's... I like the whole atmosphere of that record, and I remember the time. And that was like, that was purely experimental. That was like, you know, no intention of thinking about an audience. It's like, well, let's try this, let's try that. You know.
Yeah, I think it came out great. That's actually my favorite as well. So I wanted to make sure that was still the case. So
that is still the case. Yeah, although I haven't heard it in many years. So.
Yeah. Do you have the multi tracks for that one?
I don't know. Actually, that's a good question. I'm not even sure. I'm not sure we have it. If we do, it wouldn't be complete. I don't think. I'll find out. I'll ask Kerry.
All right. I'll
send you an inventory.
So June 25th, this will come out, and it's going to be on, obviously in Dolby Atmos. It's going to be 5.1. It's going to be CD, Blu-ray. I think there's a special colored vinyl release as well.
Apparently so. That's what I hear.
Do you get a copy of everything that comes out? Do you keep a catalog of all of the stuff that you've released?
I don't actually. No. Well, they will probably send it in the end, but I'm kind of so unsentimental about the whole thing. I kind of, if someone comes down and says, "Oh, I like that," I say, "Yeah, take it." So
yeah, I always wonder that about artists, like how often they listen to their own stuff. I would think that you've spent so much time creating it and playing it live and hearing it in the studio that you probably don't want to hear it anymore after it comes out.
Yeah, and I think, I never played it. I never played it for years until we actually had to re-release it. It's not, you have to listen to it now as a kind of academic exercise to make sure it's okay. But I'd never do it for kind of pleasure or to kind of, or, you know, some kind of nostalgia thing. It's not really what I'm interested in.
How do you think it holds up after all these years?
Well, I think it's strange enough that it could only be us, which is, that's a good thing. So I think it holds up pretty good, but I mean, I'm not the one to kind of say really. It's, I don't know.
Fair enough. Ray Shulman of Gentle Giant, thank you so much for your time today. It's been just an absolute pleasure talking to you about this album and your band. You know, it's brought a lot of joy to a lot of people. I'm old enough to where I could have heard your band when I was growing up, but I actually didn't come to it until much, much later in life. So I'm still exploring. I'm still learning. I'm still hearing new things when I listen to them. So this has been fun for me. I hope that you guys have a lot of success with these Stephen Wilson remixes. You certainly have these in the correct hands in terms of the, you know, the mixes and the 5.1 surround. And I look forward to hearing those, in all the speakers when that comes out.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, thank you so much.
Michael's Record Collection is hosted and produced by Michael Citro. Logo graphic courtesy of Jerry Cutchins. Follow Michael's Record Collection on social media, at Mike's Records on Twitter, and Michael's Record Collection on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. If you like what you hear, you can support the show through our Patreon at patreon.com/Michael's Record Collection. For the free newsletter version, go to substack.com and just type Michael's Record Collection into the search bar. Thanks for listening.